Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Good morning. Dr. Nicholas Dodman is an old friend. He's not been on this radio show for, well, way too long, actually. Veterinary behaviorist who, by the way, has authored, gosh, so many books for the general public, also for veterinary professionals, including pharmacology books. We'll talk about that in a moment and what that means. A pioneer in the field in the best of ways. Good morning, Dr. Dodman.
Good morning, Steve.
And these days you are involved with, you're co-founder of the Center for Canine Behavioral Studies. We'll start there. What is that?
Well, it's my opportunity to give back after all those years working in hospitals, veterinary hospitals, teaching hospitals. That when I retired from Tufts as professor emeritus in 2016, I thought, you know, I can't just not do anything now. What do I want to do? And what I wanted to do was to continue research designed to help people and pets to, I guess the motto as we founded it was basically to try and keep pets in homes, that they should have a home for life, in particular dogs, although we do have a little section on the website, which is dogstudies.org, mm-hmm. dogstudies.org. There's a little cat's corner there with some cat information too. I uploaded all my lecture notes to that site. But the main function is research. So we've got about 6,000 members, and we circulate to them sort of carefully designed surveys, asking them all kinds of questions. One of the first ones we did was, you know, like with the 6,000 people, does your dog have any behavior problems? So it turns out that something like 95% in the raw numbers, a little bit less when we modified it, but a large number of people do face behavior problems, many of which are totally fixable. So then we then did some treatment papers, too. We asked people about aggression, who they went to see, whether it was a trainer or a veterinarian, whether there was a medical exam, whether there was anything found on the medical exam, what program was used, how well did it work out, were medications used, and so on. So following the yellow brick road of that results of that study, you could find the right person to treat your dog with the right program to reduce, for example, aggression in one study and a parallel study in fears and phobias. I've done many other studies, too.
All right, let's back it up a couple steps. First of all, the number one reason for pet birds, for cats, and we'll keep it to dogs for now, but all the same for other species as well, that they die has nothing to do with any disease process such as cancer, heart disease. It is behavior. And those animals are often relinquished to animal shelters as a result of perceived bad behavior. Often I say that I say perceived, Dr. Dodman, because very oftentimes, if not nearly always, that dog is just doing what it can to cope given the situation that it's in. Am I right about that?
You are. I mean, the fact is, if you had a perfectly well-behaved dog that you loved and he loved you like I did until he passed away, most dogs that die of disease as opposed to behavior die of cancer. But a lot of dogs, like which you're talking about, with behavior problems end up by getting surrendered. So behavior problems that are sometimes perceived and the dog basically doing dog things can lead to their surrender and premature death.
What did you find in your survey to be the number one for dogs? The number one most concerning issue or behavior problem? I would have guessed perhaps separation anxiety, as we've seen more and more of that, but I don't know. What did your survey say?
Well, anxious problems in general accounted for almost 50% of all behavior problems, and separation anxiety was right up there as a major section of those anxious type behaviors. And strangely, you know, when you do studies from universities, you see a biased population. So if you did a university study as to animals that are brought to a behaviorist, 70% involve aggression. When you look at aggression through a study like ours, which just goes out and is like stopping people on the sidewalk and asking them, does your dog have a problem? The incidence of aggression goes down to like 20% and is not as high as the pure anxiety conditions.
Is that because going to a veterinary behaviorist in a university setting is usually the last resort and often the most difficult to deal with problems?
That's exactly right. So I used to call our clinic at Tufts the last resort nation because people have been everywhere. You know, they say we've seen two or three trainers. This, the other. And, of course, aggression is a very serious problem. A lot of people, like one of the studies we did was on light chasing in different breeds of dogs. And it turns out that when we asked the problem, you know, asked about the problem and said, you know, how severe do you rate this? They said, well, not really. It's not terribly bothering. You know, a few people said there was some damage done to furniture or carpets or something, but mostly it didn't really bother them too much. But aggression's a totally different thing. If you've got aggression going on to your friends or family or to another dog, that becomes kind of untenable.
You were the one that did research way back when, in the day, about compulsive behaviors in dogs. And what did you learn as far as solving those problems, such as tail chasing or light chasing? And also, is there a genetic predisposition?
The answer is yes. It's a combination of genetics and sort of thwarted biological objectives. So, you know, if you have this genetic predisposition and you put them in the pressure cooker of life, these behaviors can spring out. So the one breed that we studied, you know, when you're studying things in great detail, you need to concentrate on a breed because there are differences in genetics between breeds, subtle, but enough to make a difference. So we studied Dobermans. And in order to see whether the thing looks like or is like human obsessive compulsive disorder, the first thing you have to do is say, does it kind of look like is it repetitive? Does it last for, you know, an hour a day? And try and fulfill those look-like criteria. But one of the compulsive disorders, which is sort of compulsive paw licking, as in acral lick dermatitis, or otherwise known as lick granuloma, sure, it looks like hand washing in children. So we got some face validity. But then you have to go to the next level. Is there predictive validity? And the answer is yes, because you can predict, as did the great Judith Rapoport in the first study of its type from the National Institute of Mental Health, do they respond to the drugs that are used to treat human OCD in exactly the same way? And they do, exactly to the same extent, exactly over the same time course. So there's predictive validity. But we went further than that. We did the genetics. We discovered a gene called CDH2, or neural cadherin, which predisposes dogs, Dobermans in that case, to compulsive disorder. That was later replicated in a Chinese study in Belgian Malinois that were circling and was finally substantiated in humans with OCD in Stellenbosch, South Africa, by a friend of mine down there who's a professor at the university and
so the question,
a lot.
So the question would be, okay, if your dog has that issue, what can you do about it? Also, dog bite numbers are up. I want to talk about that as well. As pharmacology, you were the guy that said Prozac for dogs, maybe not such a bad thing. We'll come right back with Dr. Nicholas Dodman on WGN. He's a veterinary behaviorist and also co-founder of the Center for Behavioral Studies. We're talking about OCD in dogs, but is it really obsessive compulsive behavior? I believe veterinarians say compulsive behavior, really. They don't obsess about it per se. But yes, there can be a genetic predisposition, as you point out. And what do you do about the dog that's chasing its tail or chasing lights, Dr. Dodman?
Well, the first thing to do, you know, we were saying that there's an environmental component, is to try and engage that dog in a species-typical behavior. So I had one light-chasing border collie, and I said to the owner, you know, not really expecting he'd follow through, I said, of course, the ideal way to fix your dog's problem is to give him something real, and a sheepdog like that would love to be working sheep. Well, the man happened to find a flock of sheep out in Weston, Massachusetts, where he was allowed to train his dog to herd sheep, and the light chasing compulsion just disappeared. So if you're doing something that you were designed to do, a terrier might be, you know, get involved in earth trials or some such. Sight hounds might like to chase a fake hare around a track, you know, sort of lure coursing type thing, but with a fake animal. Just try and fulfill their biological objectives. It's really a form of environmental enrichment, plus plenty of exercise, quality time, and such like. But oftentimes, with that alone, although sometimes you can be successful, you usually have to resort to the so-called antidepressant drugs, which are really mood stabilizers, and that is drugs in the Prozac family, you know, Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Luvox, and that sort of thing. But as with humans, it doesn't always work in every dog, and you might get, for example, a 30 or 40% improvement. So we came up from the drawing board with a brand new study, and the psychiatrist at Harvard sort of scorned us to start with, said, you've got to be kidding, that's not going to work. Well, it did. We came up with a drug that block glutamate. And glutamate is the main excitatory neurotransmitter in the central nervous system. And when you block that with a so-called NMDA blocking drug, you can augment the effect of the, so call it Prozac. And so it's 1 + 1 = 3. So you get this effect. And that was published in Psychopharmacology in 2010. Lead author was Evelyn Stewart, who's a psychiatrist, and myself and Lou Schuster, my erstwhile buddy in my studies at Tufts. He was on that paper too, but it was our idea, and they just had the human patients that they could actually try it out on.
And going back before we get too deep into this, but going back in time, you wrote an entire book about psychopharmacology, which was controversial at the time for pets. Now it is considered routine to, for the right pet, under the right circumstance, offer the right drug at the right dosage, all very, very important. But the fact is that you cannot learn if you are panicked. You cannot learn if you are over anxious, for lack of a better word. You cannot learn if you're involved with a, oftentimes you can, but oftentimes you cannot learn if you are chasing a light, for example, or your tail, if you happen to be a dog. People rarely do that. But you're the one that said, pharmacology really can help. Here's why. We only have a couple minutes here because I wanted to talk more about the Center for Canine Behavior Studies. So can you give me a minute or so on that?
Yeah, well, what I got into animal behavior through an epic experiment in the early 90s, actually in horses, but I became totally bitten by the bug of behavior. And of course, my knowledge, formerly an anesthesiologist, I knew all about brains, neurotransmitters and stuff like that, how to alleviate anxiety and pain. That's all part of the discipline. So I brought that skill to the behaviorists, and they scorned me to start with, like, oh, you know, real behaviorists wouldn't resort to this. And a lot of them sort of turned up their noses. I had one colleague who was on the same wavelength as me, as Karen Overall. Mm-hmm. And the two of us both had this same interest. And in those days, she said, however, I know that your knowledge of this is greater than mine. Of course, nowadays, we're at least equals. But gradually, one by one, like dominoes, they all fell. And now, there's hardly a behaviorist who hasn't either written a book or published papers about the use of medicines to help resolve otherwise refractory behavior problems.
And again, using the right drug at the right dosage for the right circumstance, you are not changing that personality. That is the myth that I think still exists, Dr. Dodman.
That's true. A lot of people say, well, especially a few years ago, they'd say, I don't want my dog drugged. You know, and when they're thinking drug, they're thinking sort of sedate, you know, sort of eyeballs hanging out, eyelids half closed or staggering around. These drugs that we use are otherwise called smart drugs. They target a particular receptor that controls the behavior of interest. So, you know, if you were looking at something like an eating disorder, opioids are intimately involved in eating type behaviors, overeating and stuff like that. So if you take a drug that blocks an opioid receptor, conversation involved at all. You've just targetedly knocked out the mechanism that's causing that problem. And that's what it is. It's smart drugs with, quotes, minimal to no collateral damage.
Now, the Center for Canine Behavioral Studies, a nonprofit that you help found. We only have 2 minutes left here. I know there's a newsletter people can sign up for. There's a website, which you will give that website to folks, where you can help to participate in surveys as a volunteer so people like you can learn more.
Well, the quick way is dogstudies.org. And dogstudies is all one word, dogstudies.org. The long version gets you there, too. The Center for Canine Behavior Studies, all one word, .org. And when you arrive there, you can read all about our studies. You can read all fixes for all kinds of problems. And you'll see some of our latest ventures. One of them is into alternative approaches to medicine, because we found in the first two studies that if you're using certain nutraceuticals and herbal remedies, there's sometimes, across the board, about a 5- to 7-fold chance of improvement. So that study is open right now. We've got a few hundred people. We're hoping to get a few hundred more. So if anybody out there listening has treated their dog with one of these tinctures, whether it's St. John's wort or chamomile or something, and we'd like to know whether it worked or it didn't work and such like, they can sign up on the thing. But also, we have a main objective right now, which is called the Bee Bite Smart Initiative, which is designed to keep children bite-free, because it's damaging, and psychologically damaging as well as physically damaging, also causes dogs to get thrown out of their home and or put down. So this is our new initiative, and you could read all about that on the website.
And that's really important. And in fact, I will have you on to talk more about that, because dog bite numbers are, in fact, up. Dr. Nicholas Dodman, veterinary behaviorist, give us the website one more time.
Dogstudies.org.
That's easy. Talking to you is as well. It's great to talk to you again. Thank you so much.
A post by dog trainer Zach George that shocked me. Now, listen, I've talked about this before, that dog trainers should be regulated, should be licensed, and the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers have been in the process of doing that. But they want to, in that process, and I did not know this, say you can use any kind of equipment you like, pretty much, including shock collars. And I thought, no, this is supposed to be best practices for dog trainers. Zach George, the dog trainer, has been talking about this for some time. And like me, very angry about it, because listen, the scientific community has shown over and over again the harmful effects of using shock. We'll talk about this next week with Zach George here on WGN.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. We have so many wonderful animal sheltering facilities in Chicago, outside Chicago, and one of those is Anderson Humane, which covers the Fox River Valley area. 4 locations, which we'll talk about. Dean Daubert is the CEO and president. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And you guys do amazing work and a wide variety of work and programs, which we will talk about. So in urban areas, it's been, and you kind of are in an urban area, but I'd argue kind of you are, kind of not. We've seen more animals relinquished because of economic reasons. So the good news is during the pandemic, people adopted in record numbers from all over the country, all over the world, really. And a record number now of multi-pet homes. Not only a record number of homes with pets, but multi-pet homes. But that means you have to pay for 3 dogs and a cat or whatever it is. And some people are finding that more difficult to do than ever before, and or find housing that welcomes a pet or multi-pets. And it's the economy and that housing issue in many urban areas, including in the city, that have driven relinquishments, though many reasons for relinquishments. But that's the big driver at the moment. Is that true for you as well?
Yes, we're seeing that. As a matter of fact, last year, we saw about a 25% increase in the applications to surrender coming in to the shelter, which coupled with, you know, dog adoption slowing slightly and not, you know, certainly not improving due to the factors that you just mentioned. I mean, it's very difficult sometimes for folks, especially young people, to find a place that will allow them to adopt a dog or even a large dog or a small dog. And that's one of the reasons we're seeing cats have their moments right now, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, that's in a good way, right?
Yes, very positive. Cat adoptions are up, and that's great. And, you know, the problem right now is finding homes for all the dogs, especially large dogs.
Well, we talked about the economy. So one thing you offer is low-cost veterinary care. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So we have a low-cost veterinary clinic, partially funded by the Milstein Foundation, who helps offset some of our costs. And we're able to offer low-cost spay and neuters to the public at about 50% of what you'd pay at a regular vet's office. And if someone shows a need, we have a sliding scale that reduces that price further up until free for some folks if they qualify. Now, do you think a little bit ahead and make an appointment with us and go through a process? But we do thousands of low-cost spay and neuters and vaccines for the public each year. We even do a select number of dentals each year.
Hmm. And that's huge. So how do people find out about that? And is it only people who live in the Fox River Valley area, or people are hearing you in Iowa now? I mean, theoretically, could you drive in from anywhere and receive these services?
Yes, it's open to anybody. They would go to our website, which is ahconnects.org. You can just Google Anderson Humane. Go to our clinic tab, and it's going to have you send an email, and then you'll get some dates and times. Once it asks you a few questions about the size and weight of your dog or cat, you'll get some times and dates that you'd be able to schedule your low-cost surgery for.
I love the fact, and, you know, I've spoken at Anderson Humane on behavior-related issues. And ever since I can remember, that's been a focus, and that's important. The number one reason why animals die in America is not heart disease or cancer or kidney disease or it's behavior. And, in fact, you offer behavior resources for folks that are having problems.
Absolutely. We have a hotline that folks can call into and ask questions. And what we'll do is, well, if it's a simple problem, we'll give them some recommendations. Often we'll refer to a qualified trainer in that person's area. We offer dog training classes through Anderson Humane as well, everything from puppy all the way up to canine good citizen, as well as an assortment of classes like we go for walks, group walks with dogs. And that really helps with things like reactivity. This is great for that. So we try to provide solutions. The best place for a dog is to never even enter a shelter system. Keep them in their home.
Let's say I adopt a dog from you tomorrow, and then I take a dog training class. By the way, dog training classes aren't only for puppies, but I take a dog training class. Do you find that there are fewer relinquishments, fewer problems, for people that have gone ahead and taken advantage of those classes that are offered compared to those who don't?
Oh, my gosh. I think statistics will prove that time and time again. It's, you know, you need to have some classes that really your dog training classes are to train the people, right, on how to work with their animals in a fear-free way so that you reduce fear, anxiety, and stress, and you create a healthful environment for your animal. And they learn the cues that we need them to know to be successful in a home environment and out in the public. And folks that put that time in have a much happier, healthy, and I dare say it, loving relationship with their pet versus folks that don't take that time.
You know, being on the Fear Free Advisory Board since day one, probably since Fear Free came about, which is an initiative that was originally designed to lower fear, anxiety, and stress for veterinary visits, has long now been expanded to dog trainers and to groomers and to animal shelters. And I love the fact that Anderson Humane takes fear-free so seriously. Have you found that it makes a difference?
It absolutely makes a difference in the adoptability of our animals, in the time that they stay in the shelter. They get into the shelter and out of the shelter, into a loving home, faster due to our fear-free efforts. Every single one of our employees go through the fear-free training, which is a free online resource for shelters. So it's a great program that really teaches you just how to have some really a lot of common sense things to make the animals more comfortable in a shelter environment. And I have found that this is great for the animals, and it's led to a whole enrichment program for us to do as much as we can to make their stay here as pleasant as possible. Now, we hope that stay is short, so we always try to put them into a foster home if possible, because that's even better than the shelter, right?
Right. Yeah, there's no question about that. And foster families have been a savior. We're going to learn more about how you can foster, if you'd like, from Anderson Humane. And I want to know specifically how fear-free has made a difference for you. And you do something no other shelter that I know of in the immediate Chicago area does. And we'll talk about that, too, when we come back on WGN with Dean Daubert of Anderson Humane. Dean Daubert is the CEO and president of Anderson Humane, covering Kane County, parts of Cook County, the Fox River Valley area. Fear-free, that's what we were talking about. This initiative that is free for animal shelters to minimize the best they can fear, anxiety, and stress of animals in shelters. And, I would suggest, Dean, that when that happens, fear, anxiety, and stress of employees and volunteers is minimized as well, which makes then the animals feel even better, which makes the people feel even better. It's kind of a cyclical, contagious thing, I think, because if a dog jumps to the front of the cage and is growling because it's scared, usually is the reason why that happens. But then people get scared and then the dog gets more scared. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And our entire staff goes through the entire 6 hours of fear-free training, which is free to us, which is such a great service. Thank you for your service on their board. Because it really helps our animals, doing small things like giving dogs agency to come in and out of their kennels at their own pace really makes a difference to their adoptability. Like, for example, our cats, we might do easy things to reduce that fear, anxiety, and stress, like putting their carriers up on a table that's elevated and cover them with a towel. And that makes sense, right? Cats don't. They seek high places. If your cat's at home, where's that? It's up on its cat tree when the neighbor comes over or something, right? So we keep them elevated. We will cover them. If they seem to be a little scared, we'll cover their condo so that they have a little privacy and can decompress. It really makes a difference. And just like you said, when we take a dog into a visiting room and meet with somebody, a calm, happy dog, it's going to be much more adoptable than a dog that is stressed and maybe is exhibiting some stress behaviors and jumping and curling and bouncing around.
Have adoptions gone up since you've initiated this fear-free program?
Absolutely. We did almost 4,000 adoptions last year, and this year we would do well over 4,000.
Wow. Good for you. But the bad news is you have so many animals to adopt, and you do what you can to ameliorate that issue. I want to talk about animals that may not be so adoptable, something that you do that I don't believe any other animal shelter in the greater Chicago area does, and that is to rehabilitate wildlife.
Absolutely. So we are one of the larger wildlife rehabilitators, not just in the area, but in Illinois. And we'll care for well over 3,000 native wildlife animals this year through our Elburn Forest Preserve Wildlife Rehabilitation Program with Anderson Humane. So that's everything from baby songbirds to raptors with an injured wing. We've had beavers come through, even things like flying squirrels, which I didn't even know existed in Illinois. I thought that was a South American thing, but apparently we have lots of flying squirrels in Illinois, and we got to see one come in and had successful outcomes.
Flying squirrels?
Flying squirrels.
I had a producer once that was a flying squirrel, but that's a completely different thing. Now, let me ask you about that. So if you see an injured squirrel, flying squirrel or otherwise, or an injured bird, what do you do? Do you call and say, this is what I have found, and maybe even take a picture of the animal?
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head, is that we want to get a call before you bring the animal into us. We're going to guide you through what's appropriate action for the animal. Oftentimes that is bringing them into us so we can do triage and do what it takes to make them as healthy as possible. Other times it may be, you know, hey, this is an orphan bird. You see the nest? Put it right back up in that nest. It's just fine. It's a myth that birds won't come back to their young because you've touched them. They are so happy just to have that bird back in their nest. Yeah, I can't tell you. Often squirrels, it's the same way. You can put that baby squirrel back in its nest if you can get to it. And if you can't, watch from a distance, and its mom will usually come and pick them back up and get them back in the nest. But our wildlife rehabilitators and our dedicated volunteers will guide you through what the right thing to do is. And that way you're not bringing us animals that may be better just fine by themselves in the wild.
And that phone number to call is?
847-697-2880, extension 25. That's 847-697-2880, extension 25. For our Wildlife Rehabilitation Department. And of course, that first number will get you right to Anderson Humane as well.
Now, oftentimes these animals need medical care. So you provide that care. And then the goal is to, I assume, reintroduce that animal back into whatever habitat it belongs in.
My gosh, Steve, the best thing we get to see is the wildlife releases. And we work with an extensive group of partners that allow us to release in their farms. We work with the King County Forest Preserve that will tell us where is an appropriate release site for some of the animals as well. And if you follow us on Facebook or Instagram, you can see those animals be released back into the wild. And it just brings a little joy to your day when you see a hummingbird let out of his carrier and going back into nature, or a beaver that gets released, run away into the river and swim away. It's just a wonderful thing to see.
Absolutely. So you have several locations where you adopt, I don't believe you adopt beavers, but dogs and cats, and sometimes guinea pigs or hamsters or whatever else. Where are those locations at?
Great. We have our main location at 1000 South LaFox in South Elgin. That's the actual shelter where we do all our intakes, and we have an adoption center here. We have on Army Trail Road in Bloomingdale, inside the Petco. They have generously donated us space to have dog and cat adoptions year-round. So we run a full facility, adoption facility there as well. So we always have a great selection of animals to choose from there to adopt. And then we have cats available at the South Elgin Petco, the Algonquin Petco, and the Geneva Petco.
Perfect.
So lots of opportunities. And you can see every animal that's available for adoption at our website, which is ahconnects.org.
Or you can Google Anderson Humane. We have 1 minute left. Tell us about an event coming up, perhaps.
Great. Yes, in September 28th is our annual Walk for Animals and 5K run. So anybody that wants to get out there and do a 5K run or just have some fun with your pet and do a walk with us, please go online to ahconnects.org, sign up. It's in Batavia at the Riverwalk, 1000 North Island Avenue in Batavia. And then if you're looking for an adoption event, we have adoption events almost every weekend, and you can find those right on our website at ahconnects.org.
Perfect. Dean, Anderson Humane goes unheralded because there are so many shelters, you know. It's hard to give them all. But I'll tell you, the work that you do is amazing. Continue to do that work, please. It's really important. Dean Daubert, CEO, President, Anderson Humane. Thank you, Dean.
Just a major loss here at WGN Radio, losing Tom Peterson, who passed away. Tom Peterson, I would not be here. If it was not for Tom Peterson, I was on one morning with Bob Collins. And after that show, there happened to be a staff meeting, which Tom Peterson said, you know, you've been talking about doing specialty shows. How about a pet show? Everyone has a pet. And Steve, people know him on WGN. He's been on as a guest very frequently, and he has a radio background. It makes sense. Mary June Rose, program director at that time, said, I don't know if I'm crazy about pets, but let's go for it, because I like Steve too. I will always be so grateful, because anything I've been able to do to help listeners or to make a difference in Chicago and beyond because of this platform, the greatest radio station in America, wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Tom Peterson. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.